Psalm 144, the Psalm of David. Blessed be Jehovah my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. My loving kindness and my fortress, my high tower and my deliverer, my shield and the one in whom I take refuge, who subdues my people under me. Lord, what is man that you take knowledge of him, or the son of man that you are mindful of him? Man is like a breath, his days are like a passing shadow. Bow down your heavens, O Jehovah, and come down. Touch the mountains, and they shall smoke. Flash forth lightning and scatter them. Shoot out your arrows and destroy them. Stretch out your hand from above. Rescue me and deliver me out of great waters, from the hands of foreigners, whose mouth speaks lying words, and whose right hand is a right hand of falsehood. I will sing a new song to you, O God. On a harp of 10 strings I will sing praises to you, the one who gives salvation to kings, who delivers David his servant from the deadly sword. Rescue me and deliver me from the hand of foreigners, whose mouth speaks lying words and whose right hand is the right hand of falsehood, that our sons may be as plants growing up in their youth, that our daughters may be as pillars, sculptured in palace style, that our barns may be full, supplying all kinds of produce, that our sheep may bring forth thousands and 10,000s in our fields, that our oxen may be well laden, that there be no breaking in or going out, that there be no outcry in our streets. Happy are the people who are in such a state. Happy are the people whose God is Jehovah. Now this psalm, if you paid attention or listened along as I read it, or you may have noticed as you read it yourself, is really broken into 3, maybe 4 different sections that are very, very different from one another. They do relate to each other. They do have, you know, they fit in the story. But the mood changes, the text changes very quickly. It starts with, blessed be the Lord my rock, or Jehovah my rock. And by my rock, he means the thing that can be counted on, the strong thing there to stand on, to rest upon, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. Now, this is an odd imagery. And you think of David, okay, David was a fighter and he was a warrior and all this, but why would this be in the Bible? Well, first off, you should see that people are supposed to be able to defend themselves. But more to the point, it's God who takes care of us and gives us the tools that we need to do our work, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. But then it goes on to say, this person, this God, is my loving kindness, which is, you know, think of the thought of mercy, and my fortress, my high tower and my deliverer, my shield and the one in whom I take refuge, who subdues my people under me. Here we have a king, and if you look at it, it's just from the perspective of David. One who knows that it's God who subdues his people under him. This isn't the foreigners. The text specifically says his people. Now I'm going to not save it up for the end because you have to look at it all the way through. This is really a psalm, as all of them are, about Jesus. And this, if you look at it from the Calvinistic perspective, it's really an interesting line, who subdues my people under me. That it's God, the Father, and the Spirit who brings his people under Jesus as King of Kings and, well, the king of the church. The next verse is interesting too. Lord, what is man that you take knowledge of him, or the son of man that you are mindful of him? The two times you see man in this verse, they're different words in the Hebrew. They're not the same thing. First one is, Lord, what is man? And it's Adam, meaning men, you know, guys. You know, the name of Adam as the first man. And the second line, where the son of man, it's the son of... Oh, I just had it too. Enosh. Yes, Enosh, which means mortality, or the ones who die. What is the son of man that you are mindful of him? Why would God care about us? We're like a breath. His days are like a passing shadow. Well, that's the crude way of looking at man. This is more the humanistic way of looking at us. Here today, gone tomorrow. You know the poem Ozymandias? Nobody will remember what we built and what's left behind us. But we know that we're made in the image of God. We know that God will remember us, will save us. The idea that we're passing and gone forever is not the truth. But it's the way we're challenged to think sometimes. And if you think of Jesus there getting ready to die in the garden, it would seem like it was going to his death as a waste, as a failure, as a loss. But you see the psalm goes on to countermand the idea in these two verses. Bow down your heavens, O Jehovah, and come down. Touch the mountains and they shall smoke. We have all this imagery of lightnings and arrows and hands from above to rescue him from out of great waters from the hands of foreigners whose mouths speak lying words, whose right hand is the right hand of falsehood. Now, don't know exactly when David wrote this. There's a couple times he was in the hands of foreign speakers. But if we look at this again from the perspective or the interpretation of this as Jesus' life, you can think of when he was with the Roman soldiers as they were getting ready to nail him up. But then in verse 9, everything changes again. I'll sing a new song to you, O God. He's back into triumph and giving praise to God. On a harp of 10 strings, I will sing praises to you. I'm not sure what the deep meaning of 10 strings are. I'm sure somebody's written books on that. The one who gives salvation to kings, who delivers David, his servant, from the deadly sword. And we know that David was rescued many times from times of trouble. And we know that God rescued Jesus from the sword on several occasions. And from the cross, or from the tomb, more like, on that first, well, when we changed the day of worship to Sunday. And then through here, we see that leaning on God, not just for salvation. Rescue me and deliver me from the hand of foreigners, whose mouth speaks lying words, whose right hand is the right hand of falsehood. But then going on, that our sons may be as plants grown up in their youth. And we see the sons, well, we know what that means. That our daughters may be as pillars, sculptured in palace style. That means strong, sturdy, they're ready to work and do their job. That our barns may be full, supplying all kinds of produce. Our sheep will have babies. Our oxen will be well laden. This isn't just looking at prosperity. If you look at this language and how it's arranged, you're looking at inheritance and continuation. That for generations, the nation will be blessed. Not just, I'll be rich today. That's why they speak of the sheep having babies, of our children growing up. There will be no breaking in or going out, and no outcry in our streets. Well, breaking in makes sense. You know, nobody's breaking into the cities. Nobody's breaking into the houses. No going out. What does that mean? Where you have to flee the city, whether it's pestilence or tyranny or fire, where you have to run out. No outcry in our streets. I don't know if any of you have been paying attention to what's going on in Ukraine these days, but the idea of no outcry in the streets can be a very restful thing if you understand what the flip side of that looks like with the riots and such going on. Happy are the people in such a state. Happy are the people whose God is Jehovah, and it uses the covenant name there for God. We look to God to deliver us from whatever we're going through, whatever problems we have, but not just to get us through it, not just to make us prosperous. And those verses don't teach a prosperity gospel. They teach that God is the God of generations, of inheritance, of prosperity for a country, for a people, throughout time.